Chapter 10. Hero, a political saint. But I beg to be excused. I am content in fitting myself to be a worker. And what can you people do, by scattering a few drops of blood on the snow? On this immensity. On this unhappy immensity. I tell you, he cried, in a vibrating, subdued voice, and advancing one step nearer the bed, that what it needs is not a lot of haunting phantoms that I could walk through, but a man. Halton threw his arms forward, as if to keep him off in horror. I understand it all now, he exclaimed, with awestruck dismay. Understand at last. Razumov staggered back against the table. His forehead broke out in perspiration, while a cold shudder ran down his spine. What have I been saying, he asked himself. Have I let him slip through my fingers after all? He felt his lips go stiff like buckram, and instead of a reassuring smile only achieved an uncertain grimace. What will you have, he began in a conciliating voice which got steady after the first trembling word or two. Hat will you have? Consider a man of studious, retired habits and suddenly like this. I am not practiced in talking delicately. But. He felt anger, a wicked anger, get hold of him again. What were we to do together till midnight? Sit here opposite each other, and think of your shambles? Halton had a subdued, heartbroken attitude. He bowed his head. His hands hung between his knees. His voice was low, and pained but calm. I see now how it is, Razumov brother. You are a magnanimous soul, but my action is abhorrent to you, alas. Razumov stared. From fright he had set his teeth so hard, that his whole face ached. It was impossible for him to make a sound. And even my person too, is loathsome to you perhaps. Halton added mournfully, after a short pause, looking up for a moment, then fixing his gaze on the floor. Or indeed, unless one. He broke off, evidently waiting for a word. Razumov remained silent. Halton nodded his head dejectedly twice. Of course. Of course, he murmured. Weary work. He remained perfectly still for a moment, then made Razumov's leaden heart strike a ponderous blow by springing up briskly. So be it, he cried sadly in a low, distinct tone. Farewell then. Razumov started forward, but the sight of Halton's raised hand checked him before he could get away from the table. He leaned on it heavily, listening to the faint sounds of some town clock tolling the hour. Halton, already at the door, tall and straight as an arrow, with his pale face and a hand raised attentively, might have posed for the statue of a daring youth listening to an inner voice. Razumov mechanically glanced down at his watch. When he looked towards the door again, Halton had vanished. There was a faint rustling in the outer room, the feeble click of a bolt drawn back lightly. He was gone almost as noiseless as a vision. Razumov ran forward unsteadily, with parted voiceless lips. The outer door stood open. Staggering out on the landing, he leaned far over the banister. Gazing down into the deep black shaft with a tiny glimmering flame at the bottom, he traced by ear the rapid spiral descent of somebody running down the stairs on tiptoe. It was a light, swift, pattering sound, which sank away from him into the depths. A fleeting shadow passed over the glimmery wink of the tiny flame. Then stillness. Razumov hung over, breathing the cold raw air tainted by the evil smells of the unclean staircase. All quiet. He went back into his room slowly, shutting the doors after him. The peaceful steady light of his reading lamp shone on the watch. Razumov stood looking down at the little white dial. It wanted yet 3 minutes to midnight. He took the watch into his hand fumblingly. Slow, he muttered, and a strange fit of nervelessness came over him. His knees shook, the watch and chain slipped through his fingers in an instant, and fell on the floor. He was so startled that he nearly fell himself. When at last he regained enough confidence in his limbs to stoop for it, he held it to his ear at once. After a while he growled, stopped, and paused for quite a long time, before he muttered sourly, it's done. and now to work. He sat down, reached haphazard for a book, opened it in middle, and began to read. But after going conscientiously over two lines, he lost his hold on the print completely, and did not try to regain it. He thought there was to a certainty a police agent of some sort watching the house across the street. He imagined him lurking in a dark gateway, goggle-eyed, muffled up in a cloak to the nose, and with a general's plumed, cocked hat on his head. This absurdity made him start in the chair convulsively. He literally had to shake his head violently to get rid of it. The man would be disguised perhaps as a peasant. A beggar. Perhaps he would be just buttoned up in a dark overcoat and carrying a loaded stick, a shifty-eyed rascal, smelling of raw onions and spirits. This evocation brought on positive nausea. Why do I want to bother about this? Thought Razumov with disgust. Am I a gendarme? Moreover, it is done. He got up in great agitation. It was not done. Not yet. Not till 12:30. And the watch had stopped. This reduced him to despair. Impossible to know the time. The landlady and all the people across the landing were asleep. How could he go and... God knows what they would imagine, or how much they would guess. He dared not go into the streets to find out. I'm a suspect now. There's no use shirking that fact, he said to himself bitterly. If Halden from some cause or another gave them the slip, and failed to turn up in the Karabolnaya, the police would be invading his lodging. And if he were not in, he could never clear himself. Never. Razumov looked wildly about, as if for some means of seizing upon time which seemed to have escaped him altogether. He had never, as far as he could remember, heard the striking of that town clock in his rooms before this night. And he was not even sure now whether he had heard it really on this night. He went to the window and stood there with slightly bent head on the watch for the faint sound. I will stay here till I hear something, he said to himself. He stood still, his ear turned to the panes. An atrocious aching numbness with shooting pains in his back and legs tortured him. He did not budge. His mind hovered on the borders of delirium. He heard himself suddenly saying, I confess, as a person might do on the rack. I'm on the rack, he thought. He felt ready to swoon. The faint deep boom of the distant clock seemed to explode in his head. He heard it so clearly. One. If Halden had not turned up, the police would have been already here ransacking the house. No sound reached him. This time it was done. He dragged himself painfully to the table and dropped into the chair. He flung the book away and took a square sheet of paper. It was like a pile of sheets covered with his neat minute handwriting, only blank. He took a pen brusquely, and dipped it with a vague notion of going on with the writing of his essay, but his pen remained poised over the sheet. It hung there for some time before it came down and formed long scrawly letters. Still-faced and his lips set hard, Razumov began to write. When he wrote a large hand, his neat writing lost its character altogether, became unsteady, almost childish. He wrote five lines one under the other. History not theory. Patriotism not internationalism. Evolution not revolution. Direction not destruction. Unity not disruption. He gazed at them dully. Then his eyes strayed to the bed, and remained fixed there for a good many minutes, while his right hand groped all over the table for the penknife. He rose at last, and walking up with measured steps, stabbed the paper with the penknife to the lath and plaster wall at the head of the bed. This done, he stepped back a pace, and flourished his hand with a glance round the room. After that he never looked again at the bed. He took his big cloak down from its peg, and, wrapping himself up closely, went to lie down on the hard horsehair sofa at the other side of his room. A leaden sleep closed his eyelids at once. Several times that night he woke up shivering from a dream of walking through drifts of snow in a Russia, where he was as completely alone as any betrayed autocrat could be, an immense, wintry Russia which, somehow, his view could embrace in all its enormous expanse, as if it were a map. But after each shuddering start his heavy eyelids fell over his glazed eyes, and he slept again. 3. Approaching this part of Mr. Razumov's story, my mind, the decent mind of an old teacher of languages, feels more and more the difficulty of the task. The task is not in truth the writing in the narrative form a precis of a strange human document, but the rendering I perceive it now clearly of the moral conditions ruling over a large portion of this earth's surface, conditions not easily to be understood, much less discovered in the limits of a story, till some key word is found, a word that could stand at the back of all the words covering the pages, a word which, if not truth itself, may perchance hold truth enough to help the moral discovery which should be the object of every tale. I turn over for the 100th time the leaves of Mr. Razumov's record, I lay it aside, I take up the pen and the pen being ready for its office of setting down black on white I hesitate. For the word, that persists in creeping under its point, is no other word than enicism. For that is the mark of Russian autocracy, and of Russian revolt. In its pride of numbers, in its strange pretensions of sanctity, and in the secret readiness, to abase itself in suffering, the spirit of Russia is the spirit of cynicism. It informs the declarations of her statesmen, the theories of her revolutionists, and the mystic vaticinations of prophets to the point of making freedom look like a form of debauch, and the Christian virtues themselves appear actually indecent. But I must apologize for the digression. It proceeds from the consideration of the course taken by the story of Mr. Razumov after his conservative convictions, diluted in a vague liberalism natural to the ardor of his age, had become crystallized by the shock of his contact with Alden. Razumov woke up for the 10th time perhaps with a heavy shiver. Seeing the light of day in his window, he resisted the inclination to lay himself down again. He did not remember anything, but he did not think it strange to find himself on the sofa in his cloak and chilled to the bone. The light coming through the window seemed strangely cheerless, containing no promise as the light of each new day should for a young man. It was the awakening of a man mortally ill, or of a man 90 years old. He looked at the lamp which... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.